Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Here at 360 Yourself, we are very proud and honored to be partnered with General Assembly. We embrace this with open arms to a new adventure. General Assembly is a global tech education company focused on the most in-demand areas today. So that's anything from UX, digital marketing, coding, data science, data analytics, to travel writing and ethics. Our/their main goal is to get you where you want to be. You can find out more about them at ga.co online or across all socials at ga_London. We also encourage you to please rate and comment about us on Apple Podcasts. If you do enjoy what we bring to your ears, we'd love to hear about it. We're supported by General Assembly, and that's right, you can get a 25% discount for their services. Promo code is 360yourself25. The code will be valid up to £75 off any one of their classes, workshops and boot camps, and is valid until the 31st 08 2021, and is not applicable to GA's full-time, part-time or online circuit courses. Full T's and C's apply. Hello and welcome back to 360 Yourself. I hope you're having a good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. We've got many, many listeners listening from all around the world, so check that out. So the idea of persistence. I'm talking to a lot of people about persistence at the moment because I think a lot of people are reflecting, well, they definitely are reflecting on their path and what kind of path they want to do. And I think the word I've been talking to a lot of people about is persistence. And persistence is everything. It's that phrase, isn't it? Like the squeaky noise in the door always gets answered. Because if you're just kind of slightly just tapping away, someone has to answer you at some point. And the idea of asking for what you want is really important. And also, just if you're not happy or you're trying to figure out a way of finding more contentment in your life, just keep asking questions and keep exploring, and let's find out what the universe has to offer and the opportunities. And this next artist, I absolutely find her work and her energy, it's just astronomical. I love her. She's so creative. She is now the new global beauty director for Burberry Beauty. I mean, what a title. What a title. But she originally started off, of course, you might know her journey if you're in the fashion and art world. But she started off as a face painter for children's parties. And then obviously she grew and she started making connections, and she did her first editorial for ID magazine, and that's kind of where it blew up. But I love this idea that like just falling into something is really, really great. And but also she is so creative, and she's doing so many other things, and just doing makeup, she's doing creative direction, she's doing the music scene, she's doing loads of different things. And I love this idea about polymaths, about not just doing one thing and about just owning yourself and owning, going, okay, well, I'm really interested in this space, let's just explore it. So you honestly will be so blown away by the way that she talks about her work, the way that she sees the world. So I really want you to listen in, because it is such a treat to have her on this podcast. Her name is Isimaya French. Enjoy. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm laughing because basically we've just had a full-on conversation before this, and I was like, we need to stop because we need to start recording.
good material we're missing.
I know. So how is your morning anyway? Well, how's your day been? It's a Monday morning, Monday afternoon. I'm assuming it's a busy day for you, as always.
It has been. It's I've had a really amazing lockdown's been strangely sort of surprisingly creative for me. I've been working with a friend and we've been writing an album together, and it's kind of culminated in we're planning a live show, and we're trying to do a cover of The Four Horsemen by Aphrodite's Child. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I am.
So I spent my morning trying to rework that song. So it's been quite fun.
So you're writing music?
I am, yeah.
is there anything you can't do? Because we were talking about earlier that you dance, you do makeup, you do creative. You're like, you're polymath.
Well, I mean, it's like, what's that thing? Jack of all trades, like king of none or whatever it is. So I've got a lot.
But I definitely think you're king of one. Yeah, definitely you are. But like, it's great though to hear that you have so much interest and curiosity in other different things rather than just what people kind of know you for within the kind of fashion and the art world sort of thing. It's quite nice. So how did that kind of come about? Going, do you have thoughts going, I just want to kind of write something, I've got this idea about music, and then suddenly you go to someone, or how does it come about?
So about 2 years ago, I was working at Days Beauty, which was a platform for young and diverse hair and makeup and creatives to showcase their work. Mm-hmm. Anyway, somebody came to me and asked if I would creative direct their album because they were working on an album, and I think we kind of got talking and realized we were very much into the same sort of styles of music. And I sort of said, well, I mean, I'd actually really just, I'd rather write the album with you.
I'd love that. I love how bold and bold you are. Like, rather than just me create a direct it, can I like write it with you? Like, that is just like,
well, yeah, so... I mean, this guy, his name is Sam Thomas. He's incredibly talented. And I don't think it was me being pushy. It was really just, we found some real kind of common territories and we want to explore it.
Right.
So,
okay.
No, it was all in good humor.
I love that.
After a bulldozer.
I love it. So tell me, I read, right, this is very, very strange. So I read that in your household when you're younger, you weren't allowed kind of, it was like anti like cosmetics and stuff.
Well, so I don't think it wasn't really anti anything, but I definitely grew up in a house of engineers. My dad, it was diagnosed much later in life that he has Asperger's, which was something that I think, you know, is a very interesting mindset. I think it can make, you know, it's Asperger's is, it's a spectral thing. It can take kind of many shapes and forms, but, you know, he is a really incredible kind of engineer, and he builds things and he sort of invents things. And I grew up in that environment. It was sort of fairly dominated by a masculine, mathematical approach to life. Mm-hmm. And my brother was an engineer, and my sister also became an engineer, and my mum, my poor mum had to put up with it all, and that's probably why we're so close. And so it was just dominated by a very sort of masculine presence. And I think especially growing up with around a kind of a very strong mindset like that, feminine things were sort of not, that there just wasn't as much room for them, I think, in the household I grew up in, which has certainly shaped and inspired the way that I work, and I'm actually very grateful for it now.
So now that you're like super super creative now, does that kind of go, when you go back home, are they kind of more like open and intrigued to kind of what your life is now compared to what you used to be grew up with?
Well, I think actually in a very like humbling way, they're interested to a degree, But you know, it's life as usual. I mean, my dad will be outside, I don't know, wiring up cables to, I don't know, tag 5G that he can't get via his,
Yeah. I love it. That's totally opposite to my household. We're all very much creative and artistic. At Christmas, we have a piano and they sing around the piano and harmonise, literally, and I can't sing.
That's like something from a Charles Dickens novel, isn't it?
It's like the Von Trapp family. It really much is. So how did it all start? Like, because we were talking about, you're very, very fascinated in dance. You did like 3D design as well, and you're interested in music. So how did you decide to go with all these different things that you probably could go down? And where was the makeup sort of trail? Because I said you earlier, you were saying you were a diver as well, but you're also into dance as well. So how did your journey come about?
So I think from when I was about 7 or 8, I engaged in both dancing and diving. They kind of happened at the same time. I had a very physical upbringing, and I would tour around the UK doing diving competitions. And then, you know, as I got older, I dance and drama and sorry, musical theatre became a lot more present in my life. And I was doing it sort of 5 days a week. And when I moved to London, I kind of, you know, obviously there comes a point where you say, you know, when you do your A-levels or whatever, okay, you're going to take this career professionally and engage with it further. And I didn't do that. I think also because I, you know, I'm from Cambridge, which is fairly, I went to a very middle of the road school, but it's a very academic place. And I think I was surrounded by a lot of very intellectual, academic, sort of traditionally driven people. I mean, and Cambridge is a strange place. I mean, on one hand, it's home to like Pink Floyd, but it also is home to Osama bin Laden. So it's quite an eclectic mix of people.
I love that.
In Cambridge. But I think I just felt like, oh my God, I've got to do something kind of academic. So I'll do maths and physics and history for A-levels. And then I think I suddenly realized, actually I want to do something creative. And so I applied to St. Martin's to do a degree in product design, industrial design. And I stayed there I dropped out at the end of my second year because I just, it just felt a little bit too kind of conformist for me. Mm-hmm. And then at the same sort of time, you know, I was still taking dance classes at Pineapple and various places. And I met Theo Adams,
the great Theo Adams with his company.
The great Theo Adams. Yeah, we love Theo Adams. And I met him and I joined his company and I began working with them as a dancer and as a performer. And we, you know, we've been to Tasmania and Japan and we've been to New York together. And I had a really, I think, honestly, that experience was probably the most informative. And Theo is wise beyond his years. I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of meeting him.
I've unfortunately not. I've heard many, many amazing things, and his creative vision is incredible. Like, I've seen him at parties and stuff, and his Paloma Faith, I think he's creative director of Paloma Faith as well. Like, I've seen some amazing stuff, but I've unfortunately never met him, and I'd love to meet him at some point.
He's incredible. I think he's sort of all of the, you know, the Joan Collins, the Joan Rivers, the Beyoncés, the all of the power divas in like one body. That's Theo. He's amazing. But also he really like showed me, it was, I think, the most sort of liberating experience working with that company, because, you know, again, I was from Cambridge and Cambridge isn't really, I mean, I know I was joking before, it's not particularly diverse. And so I was probably somewhat, you know, sheltered in a way, and suddenly being surrounded by opera singers and, you know, ballerinas from the, you know, Royal Ballet Company, and then a Japanese dancer who was amazing at Buto, and all of these kind of amazing characters, which were the Theo Adams company, to have the, you know, Gwendolyn Christie, who's in Game of Thrones, she was part of the company. And to see that everybody was so kind of like free in their minds and their bodies was a really liberating experience. And Theo, you know, Theo doesn't care what anyone thinks. And he, I don't think he ever has. And that's what's sort of so powerful about him and inspiring. He really kind of, you know, showed me, almost set a precedent for how I understood you could live, you know, you could.
But because his work is so, I mean, people really need to go through his work and look at it, because it is so out there and so kind of experimental. And it is just like, kind of like, just give, like, here I am, this is what I am, give or take it. Like, it's really, really fascinating.
It is. And it's definitely, you know, it's immersive. So it's difficult sometimes to really communicate how the power of the Theo Adams company and their performances without being there. Because it is so, a lot of the time they're very close to the audience, so you have that human sort of interaction. A lot of it is based on, you know, music that we know, because, you know, he'll do a lot of my brain's gone, mime something, and it's, what's the word?
When you mime something.
What's karaoke?
When you sing karaoke. I don't know.
Oh my God, this is embarrassing. As in, you know, anyway, whatever. He uses a lot of music that's well, sort of like well referenced.
Yeah.
And people, and you know, part of the performance is miming along to it. That's what I meant.
Right, okay, yeah.
And so he'll do these really, really clever kind of cuts of famous pieces from, you know, film or theatre, and all of these references that you understand mixed with really powerful classical music. And then he'll suddenly put a remix of Beyoncé in. So it's all this very kind of, you're very aware of all of the references, and they're all quite diverse, but there's something quite sort of eerie about the whole thing, because at the end, it's all about kind of the tragedy of the performer and this kind of, this desire to be seen and be loved and be, you know, understood. And so it's, and the audience is, I think, is that, you know, becomes very receptive of that because it's so close and personal.
There's something about immersive theatre, like when Punch Drunk was around. I don't know if you've seen Punch Drunk, but they,
it's, I know this, of it.
Yeah. Same thing. People, one of my friends, Daisy, would go, like, been 15 times over the course that it would be there, because it's this immersive, there's about 15 different stories happening at the same time, and you just go, like, and you have to go back. And it's, there's something about this immersive quality, very, very different to Theo Adams, but this immersive quality that people, audiences absolutely love, because they like to feel that emotion, that experience.
You lose yourself in it, don't you? And I think that's it. Watching a show, you know, is obviously great, but it's part, you know, it takes it to another level when you're on a physical level experiencing the production as well.
And so from going through Adams, how did the makeup come into it? Was she doing makeup, or was it anything to do with, like, Theo Adams? Was that inspired, and then you go, okay, maybe I should try that?
No, it was. Around the same sort of time I was doing, you know, I needed a job because I dropped out of university and I didn't have any money, and I became a face painter, a kid's face painter.
That story always is like the things that I always say to people, like, oh yeah, she was a face painter first, and people just go like, what? I'm like, and that's the story everyone always knows, that you're a face painter at a children's party.
I actually got really, I got quite a name for myself in London, especially around the rich families in, like, North London. I remember doing, like, parties on the Bishop's Avenue, because I got quite good. And I joined an agency called Mystical Fairies.
Are they still going?
I don't know.
Mystical Fairies.
And I would have to go, oh my God, I hated it. I loathed it. But, you know, it was well paid, and I'd have to go and dress up as a fairy, and I'd have to go to these, like, very well-off families and paint their utterly spoiled children.
Yeah.
You know, and then take my money and, you know, take the fairy wings off and go home. And So I was doing that for a number of years, and then Matthew Stone, the artist, was doing it. He's a friend of the Thea Adams company, and he was doing a shoot for ID magazine, and he wanted some body painting. And you know, I was face painting and also sort of body painting and whatever, and he asked me to be involved. So I went along and did it. And there was also a makeup artist on set, a professional makeup artist with a nice clean kit. And I remember I was in this sink washing like clay or something out of my my nasty brushes. I remember looking over at her and just thinking, that I want that job. Like, that looks so much easier than what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I then kind of just got myself a makeup kit and just it took it from there.
God, it's amazing how like someone's journey, like I love it how you didn't set out to do it and then suddenly you did it, and then suddenly you're of course after like a lot of hard work and talent that this becomes your career, like this, or one of your careers or one of your interests. And I find that absolutely fascinating. And when the ID magazine shoot came out, because obviously it still is a very, very well respected publication, did you feel like when you're kind of on that success route, because you did achieve a lot within a short space of time, did you feel like you were achieving something? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, when you become really successful, did you feel like it? Did you feel going, oh yeah, I'm doing something that I really enjoy, and it's just coming to me and people coming to work with me?
I think I've never had any goals. I so far everything I sort of done, I've done it because it's felt right at the time, so I'll do it. And I think especially with makeup, for a very long time I actually really resented the fact that I wanted to be doing dancing, and I wanted to be doing like performing with the Thea Adams company, and there were, you know, I was really enjoying that, and the fact that I was kind of being dragged away from it by this makeup career that was taking off. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes still is. I still sort of feel like, oh, but I never really meant to do this. But it's one of those things, I suppose, that, you know, for me at least, I have a fairly short attention span. And if something's continuing to like inform and educate me and, you know, inspire me and lead me to do other things, I'll continue to pursue it. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are... You know, and I often get asked about what are your goals, or people ask about achievements, and it is difficult to acknowledge any achievements, especially when they weren't things I ever set out to do. I didn't even know what ID magazine was, and I didn't even care. But I was more interested in riding around, you know, London and hanging out with the Thea Adams company and whatever it was.
What was the shift though, when you were like, okay, I've done all this stuff and this stuff is really, really cool with Thea Adams? What point did you go, okay, maybe this is a career and I'm going to really pursue this, and I'm going to like, this is going to be one of my things?
I think I just got busy and never stopped being busy. And I think, you know,
that's a nice way to do it.
What I mean is I needed to live and survive, and I at one point I was sharing a tiny room with my boyfriend at the time, very kind that he let me stay there, and I genuinely didn't have any money, and so I just had to find something that would, London's expensive, you know, that would allow me to exist.
Yeah.
And that's what makeup became. You know, I was getting booked for these kind of creative face painty jobs, and ID magazine happened. And then, you know, ID magazine means you're of a legitimate makeup artist. So you keep getting booked. I'm very, very fortunate. And I don't mean it in any other way. It's just that I didn't really have another option at the time. I wasn't going to go and get a bar job.
You found your way.
Totally. And I think that's all it's about, really. I think also you let go of things as you age, and things I might have, you know, wanted when I was much younger, I feel more comfortable about not having now. And I'm quite, you know, I think as you get older, you know, this sense of sort of just general gratitude, you know, is there's a sort of general awareness of that. And I feel very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing, because, you know, I get to speak to people like you and talk about like dancing, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just nice. It is a nice existence, really.
It is. We are very, very, I mean, that whole kind of hashtag blessed. We are very blessed. I mean, you're blessed just to do a job that you love and that you enjoy and you get paid to do. And so that's really great. So when you, let's go on to like kind of the business. What do you do when you have all these sort of projects? What do you do with, to keep sort of balanced in your life? Like, is there a sort of point where you block out within the year going, okay, for this month, I'm not going to be in London. I'm going to be somewhere else. Or do you, how do you keep mentally sane when you're really busy all the time?
I think honestly, lockdown, locking me away was the only remedy, because I've done psychotherapy for about 8 years now. I sort of stopped at the beginning of lockdown because I didn't enjoy the, you know, doing it over Zoom or whatever. I like to do it in person. So I think, you know, that, you know, for mental health, that was the best investment and general well-being I ever made. But, you know, there got to a point where I was traveling so much. And I mean, like, every week I was on either one or two long haul flights, plus, you know, another stint across Europe. And then I'd be in Korea and then I had to go back to LA. And I ended up collapsing on set one day. And I think that was, I'll never know when to, you know, I can't stop. I work hard to stop myself. And I think actually just locking me away at home was probably the best solution to try and recalibrate me, because also when you're freelance, you want to take all these opportunities and you've got the energy to, and
of course, you know, of course. You know, and we're young as well.
only so young.
Yeah, and we're young because you get to a point where you're 50s and you're 50 plus or 45 and you've been doing it 25 years, 30 years, you can't do all those long haul flights all the time and stuff. So it's difficult when you're young to go, oh, I'm young, it's fine. When I have, there's a saying like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. It's that sort of thing, mentality, just to keep going.
Oh God, totally. And actually, you know, I mean, maybe that's something that I would tell my former self, you know, get more sleep. Because I was literally getting off a plane in LA and going straight to work and then not sleep it, doing like, you know, 24 hours of shoots, getting on another plane, insomnia, back to London. So I'd end up not sleeping for like 48 hours month, regular basis.
That's crazy.
It is crazy, but, you know.
In our sort of like give back to our audience, what we like to do is like we like to say something that's inspired us. It might be like a mantra or thing. What would you give back to your younger self or like to our audience about sort of like something that's inspired you? It might be like a mantra, it might be like a film, or might be like the way that you live your life.
I think more recently I've been thinking about sort of self-fulfilling prophecies and how to kind of maybe try and undo that. I think obviously that's a lot of self-fulfilled prophecies are related to upbringing and say, you know, projections from parents or yourself or whatever. And I think, you know, to kind of summarize, you know, we often tell ourselves that we are this, or we can't have this, or we can't do this, or we can't be this, or whatever. And I think to try and sort of investigate that and try and undo some of it, because I mean, it's such a cliche thing to say, you know, you're the only person holding yourself back, but I think that's really the truth.
You are. Jim Carrey says this really profound thing. He says, you can't contain the container because I am the container. And it literally is that sort of thing that you, if you are like suppressing yourself, you're the only one that suppressing. No one else is doing it. It's just you doing it.
Yeah. And it's all, you know, non-physical things, their ideas and projections and transference. And luckily, none of that is physical. We're not locked in boxes. We do have brains that we can use and freedom of speech most of the time, unless you're on social media, and then you've got to be really careful. Yeah. But you know what I mean? So I think that's probably... But that's a hard thing to grasp, I think, and it's something that you can only get to if you're willing to sort of investigate it.
Mm-hmm. And just and have a look at yourself and just reflect a bit more. I think so. Well, I want to say thank you so much for coming 360 yourself. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're so warm and lovely, and it's just so lovely.
Oh, it was lovely. Yeah, thanks for asking me to be on your show.
This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms: Spotify, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360 underscore yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.